KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. We're with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul is a frequent contributor to the program. Paul, welcome.
Hey, good to be back with you.
It's always hard for us to find things to talk about because there's nothing really happening in politics, right?
Oh, absolutely. Nothing at all. There's stuff that's been happening since I sent you the list of things we want to talk about. So always plenty to talk about.
You could have this show every day, Paul, and you wouldn't run out of things to talk about.
Yeah, I would run out of hairs on my head or something. it'd be tough, but I could do it. I could do it on a weekly basis for sure.
Absolutely. Paul, you have already gone to vote. It's early voting time.
Yeah.
What are we voting for in this election?
Well, this is a local election. It's a little different than we've had historically, not just here in Albuquerque, but in New Mexico. We've had legal changes that have unified, if you will, our ballot so that now pretty much all elections are going to be in November one way or the other. The one kind of unusual thing was a few years ago, APS wanted a tax increase. They did that mail-in ballot thing. That was under the new law, though. But we're in a municipal election cycle, and that means that we don't have any statewide offices. We don't have any legislators. We have mayor. We have city council. We have school board. And those are all very important races. Most people will have, you know, a city councilor or a school district member to vote on, but they may not. Then they will have the United Stadium and whether to put taxpayer dollars from our gross receipts tax up to build a stadium. We got several bond issues, which never get the attention that, the United Stadium, for example, gets, but APS is looking for money, a continuation of a property tax. There's sewer and water and libraries and all those kinds of things as well. But the big ones are mayor, the United Stadium, city council, and school board. And I really want to emphasize school board.
I want to emphasize, too, that, for example, school board. A lot of people don't know much about those candidates. I've had two or three of the candidates on this show. But if you go to the APS website and click on school board member elections, you can get information. And this is information that the school board doesn't come up with it. The candidates themselves have written a bio and stance on their positions and things. So that's pretty substantially good information. Let's talk a little bit about taxpayer funding for the United Stadium.
Yeah, well, that is kind of, the issue that we have focused most of our attention on. Again, we're a nonpartisan organization, so we can't endorse candidates. We can't say that we like one better than the other. We can talk about some of the issues in the city and some of the failings, I think, of the current administration. But when it really comes down to issues, that is our sweet spot because you don't get tied in with all the partisanship and it's interesting because at least the polls that I've seen show people generally agree with us that they don't want to see taxpayer dollars allocated to a stadium for the United at a time when there are numerous serious challenges facing our city, especially policing and crime. $50 million is the price of the bond. We don't know the exact price of the stadium, even though the United is going to throw some money into the kitty, so to speak, for the stadium. Costs will be $70 million, I believe much more than that, given worsening supply chain issues, worsening ability to find items, for a construction of a stadium. It's very difficult to get all that done, and it doesn't just have short-term effects. It has not lots of knock-on effects. You're hiring construction workers, and if something doesn't show up to construction site, you still have to pay those workers, and then they have to stick around and wait and then eventually get the stuff and do what they're going to do with it. So I suspect we're talking, close to $100 million for this stadium when all is said and done. We don't know where physically it will be. And it's, like I said, it's diverting gross receipts tax revenues for the next 2.5 decades to fund a soccer stadium in somewhere in downtown. We don't know the exact.
But Paul, I'm hearing they're spending quite a bit of money on promotion and commercials prior to the November 2nd. Of course, we're right in the middle election. You can vote early right now, and this is on the ballot. The advertising says that it will not increase taxes.
Ah, semantics. Yes, it is true. Now, you will not see a specific line item tax increase in your gross receipts tax or your property taxes or any of that stuff for the stadium. But they are taking money that is being raised by the city, being generated from your gross receipts taxes. That's what you pay at the grocery store. That's what you pay. Well, not so much at the grocery store because there's an exemption on the groceries, but anything else. When you go to your Walmart, your Target, whatever, you're paying gross receipts taxes. You're also paying them on a lot of other things that make the gross receipts tax a particularly problematic tax. But, yeah, you're diverting money that could go to other functions, including hiring police officers, filling in potholes, making our city more beautiful, more safe, and doing all the things that I think are the basic functions of government. Instead, we are considering and we're voting on whether to give a new stadium to a group of millionaires who own the United Soccer team that are currently, you know, seemingly doing very well at the Isotopes Park, which is a city facility, building a new soccer-specific stadium, again, somewhere near downtown. And from my understanding, they've spent getting up to close to $1 million just promoting this stadium. And when you have somebody who has that kind of interest, it's a clear example of the concentrated benefit versus diffused cost. For average individual family, it'll cost, $100 or $200 over the scope of the project. For these people, they are putting up a lot of money because they know that the benefits of the stadium will accrue to their bottom lines.
Mm. Well, and again, I'm not against anybody making a profit. Love to see United Soccer be successful, mm-hmm. but I kind of like to see them at the top of the league rather than toward the bottom. I understand that they are possibly going to be making the playoffs, so congratulations to them. But going out to Isotopes is really actually quite, well, they call it the lab when you go to a United Soccer game, and it's kind of exciting. Maybe not ideal, but they have really developed. They have great promotion. They have great personalities on the team, and it's overall very entertaining.
Yeah, and it's not like the Isotopes Park or the lab, as they call it, is the only place possibly available to a soccer team. We have the Lobos Football Stadium, which is not used very often. You know, you get 5 or 6 home games. I'm sure they need practices, but you could certainly get some soccer games going.
Well, actually, Paul, we have a really beautiful UNM Lobo soccer field that's only now being used by one team since they got rid of the top 5 ranked Lobo men's team. And you can tell by the tone of my voice how I feel about that.
Yeah, there's that facility as well. So there are numerous options, and they all have the same thing in common, which is they are all located where the stadiums are currently located, where the parking is currently located, where people feel safe going to those games. I have real concerns. There's this idea that you're going to redevelop downtown with a soccer stadium. Well, we had a block away from my office a few weeks ago, Bernalillo County office building windows being shot out by groups of young men, teenagers and what like, very misguided youth, taking, what amounts to a semi-automatic rifle and just shooting it on the streets of Albuquerque and shooting out the windows of the county facility, which is a lot of money that they've had to invest to get that back into operations. And I can say with certainty that downtown has real problems. The homeless situation and the threat of violence and the under-policing of downtown are all much more serious issues. And if there was a concerted effort to actually address those, you'd get a lot more bang from the bucks than you would just building a soccer stadium. I actually fear for the United's future if they go downtown because those problems aren't resolved.
You know, Paul, you mentioned homeless population in Albuquerque, and I'll tell you, it's baffling because we have people from Steelbridge, which is a homeless shelter. We have people from Joy Junction, which is the largest homeless emergency shelter in the state of New Mexico. And the folks that run those have great intentions, great ministries. They work really hard, but they've essentially said, look, we have enough beds right now. Mm-hmm. For people that want help. And so the insinuation is the people that are on the street, they don't want help. They want to live where they live.
This is where the tough love portion of, you know, ministry and public policy comes into play because, you know, it's hard to get your head around the reasons that each individual winds up on the streets. But as you say, it's not a shortage of beds. It's not a shortage of options for them. Certainly not a shortage of jobs if they are inclined to work and earn money for a living, which I think a lot of the folks who are on the streets are there because of serious drug addiction problems, serious mental issues. And there's a lot of challenges in terms of how you actually help those people out. But yeah, it's a very tricky and very serious problem that I think our leadership in this city can do a much better job of addressing, and certainly demands higher prioritization than a new soccer stadium. And it's a problem that no matter where you go in this city, you see homeless on street corners, in the middle of intersections. I work downtown, so I see them sleeping by the parking garage where I park my vehicle, and let alone when I go into the areas where the United Stadium is being considered down by the rail yards, which you know, Mayor Keller wants to put that stadium there. It is not an area where I feel safe as a 6'3", 230-pound male walking in broad daylight myself, let alone a family, a woman walking in that area at night going to a soccer game. I just think it's a real it's a fraught proposition going downtown.
And again, no insinuation that I know how to solve this problem, but I do know a lot of people that are actually working on the streets. They're frontline people. Again, mentioned a couple of ministries, Steelbridge and Joy Junction, just two. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of feeding programs and other people that are doing great work. They have the same frustrations we have because they're seeing more and more homeless come to Albuquerque. Here's the part that bothers me. If I went and grabbed a lunch from Taco Cabana, and I went and sat down on a street corner anywhere, and I had my lunch, and I just left my trash everywhere, I would get arrested, handcuffed, and taken to jail. But that doesn't seem to happen to the people that are homeless, and that, I don't get that.
Yeah, it is a serious issue with the physical attractiveness of our city. And yeah, it's everything from tents and trash. I've seen people in very dry areas of our town, and you hear the fires in the Bosque. Those are almost exclusively homeless-generated fires. These are people who are living off the grid. Of course, they're cooking with open flames and that sort of thing, and I've seen people in those dry areas in a more open situation cooking with open flames, and it's just one incident away from having a serious public safety issue, let alone we know that Albuquerque is high on pedestrian death levels in terms of the studies. Those pedestrians, you know, again, you don't have absolute data, but how many of those people are on drugs and homeless? I'm going to say it's a vast, vast majority. So we have a lot of issues. I don't have all the answers. I have some answers, and I think you know, you talk about feeding and those kinds of things. I think those people in that line of work need to get a lot tougher and really focus their attention on the folks that they can rehabilitate and get back into life. And if you're just there for free lunch, if you're on drugs, maybe see you later. Sorry, we're not going to support your lifestyle and move on to another place or get a job, which
well,
I think a lot of them could do.
Yeah, and you also, and I'm sure we'll acknowledge that there's people that have mental health issues, and they do need assistance. But again, it's trying to discern who has who has need and who is just trying to take advantage. Yep. And that's always, you know, a big problem. But I do believe, in fact, I have people all the time that I speak with. So I was talking with Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates. He joins us every Friday. And Brian had an interesting quote last time he was on. He said, you know, when people are not working, they are typically not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way God's made us. He's made us to work and be productive, to care for each other, us and society. Paul Gessing's taking care of not only his family, but you're also taking care of us. You're buying goods and services and supporting the local economy. And that's what we all need to do.
Yeah, I have personal experience with that. Family member got involved in drugs, has now moved on. They passed away too young. And the phrase, idle hands are the devil's workshop, is certainly a very relevant phrase, a statement, and it's something that, unfortunately, there's a lot of policies, not just directly on homeless, but right now we've seen, thanks to COVID and thanks to federal policies, a dramatic decline in the population of the United States, in New Mexico as well, that is in the workforce, that is being productive, and I think we're going to have long-term negative ramifications from those policies that are just beginning to be felt right now.
We're going to take a quick break. We have more than enough for about 3 hours of a program, but we'll only have Paul through the top of the hour, so stay with us. We'll be back with Paul Gessing right after these messages.
Please save the date for the Albuquerque Christian Children's Home annual holiday affair, benefit dinner, and auction Saturday, November 15th at the Embassy Suites Hotel, 5 p.m. Our annual holiday affair, benefit dinner, and auction is a fun way for us to share the successes of our children and thank you for your prayers and financial support. To buy tickets, donate auction items, or make a donation, call 898-5520. More information is available at acch4kids.org.
Here's John Chitwood with an automotive analogy.
Wouldn't you agree that most people have never even read the small owner's manual that's found in the glove box of all their vehicles? That is because they think they know it already and will only open and read it in a time of an emergency. Sound familiar? There is an owner's manual that you do need to read and memorize. It's God's written word, the Bible. God is the creator and the designer, and in the Bible you will find God's design and purpose for your life and how he made a way of salvation for you and me that we may have eternal life with him through his son, Jesus Christ. Let us remember what David said in Psalm 119, "Your word I have hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you."
An automotive analogy with John Chitwood of Southern Boulevard Automotive, 2300 Southern Boulevard in Rio Rancho, 892-2300, or southernblvdautomotive.com. Thank you, Southern Boulevard Automotive, for your support of KLYT.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. We're back with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. The mission of the Rio Grande Foundation is to increase liberty and prosperity for all of New Mexico by informing citizens of the importance of individual freedom, limited government, and economic opportunity. They are a nonprofit organization. Their website is riograndefoundation.org. You can go there. It's particularly interesting to me to go there and look at how our legislature is voting on mm-hmm. various issues. Of course, you've got a legislative session coming up, and that'll be the topic of next month's conversation with you. But, Paul, we have a mayoral election going on right now. We have Eddie Aragon, a radio talk show host with KIVA. He calls himself the Rock of Talk. And I had Eddie on the show and had an interesting conversation with him. I've invited Tim Keller on the show. And I've actually submitted to him the same questions that I asked Manny Gonzalez, Sheriff Manny Gonzalez, and Keller's campaign was unresponsive. The sheriff has come on a couple of different times. So because you're nonpartisan, I want to ask you, in all of the things you've seen from the three mayoral candidates, have you seen a plan on how they want to reduce crime in our city?
The simple answer to that is no. And I'll take a step back from that particular question and give you a more general response, which is that as somebody who follows these issues quite intently, I've been disappointed with the entire mayoral race to date. Keller has been pretty much a disaster, in my opinion, as the mayor, especially on the crime issues. He's just let things go way too much. Maybe he will turn over a new leaf. He seems to be talking in that direction, but it's easier to make good noises and platitudes, which is what he's doing so far. A lot of generalities. He hasn't really talked about what we need to get the Department of Justice out of town and manage your own police department and have strong policies in place. Manny Gonzalez, you know, you talk about somebody who's been good on paper, you know, somebody who look at professional athletes and sports and you say, oh man, they're 6'5", 280. They run a 4.4 40 yard dash. They've got all these great attributes. Manny Gonzalez is that guy. He's got the law enforcement background. But we had early on the disaster with his campaign finance issues and the ethics violations. And then it's just been one thing after the other. And Gonzalez does not perform well in debates. It's a very simple thing. He doesn't communicate his ideas well. I think he probably would still be ultimately a better mayor than Keller. But it's been frustrating to watch as somebody who I think it's safe to say is the leading challenger for Keller. That really has stumbled so repeatedly. And, you know, he hasn't caught on in the polls that I've seen. We'll see. There's only one poll that matters. That's Election Day. So you got to get out and vote regardless, either in early voting, what's left of it, or on Election Day. That's November the 2nd, the Tuesday. And then there's Eddie Aragon, who I know well. I've dealt with. I've been on his radio show and radio station numerous times. He definitely communicates the issues in a way that I think a lot of folks, especially on the conservative side, can get behind. But he doesn't have really any of the experience. It's almost like you'd need to kind of clone Eddie's communication skills and ability to, you know, stand firm on principle with Manny Gonzalez's experience in law enforcement and everything he's done in his career. And then you might have a real solid candidate there to take on Mayor Keller. But at this point in time, the polls I've seen lend me to believe that Keller is going to wind up getting reelected. And hopefully he's turned over a new leaf. We'll see. We remain optimistic. Obviously, it's not just about this election, November 2nd, because we have a runoff process in Albuquerque. So if Keller does not hit the 50% vote threshold, there will be a subsequent vote like we had 4 years ago when Dan Lewis and Wayne Johnson were on the Republican side. Keller didn't get the 50% threshold. Then we wound up with a runoff between Dan Lewis, city councilor running again for city council, and Mayor Keller, and Keller subsequently won. So we could have that wrinkle, and I think if you put them in the same election and you know, have the re-vote essentially, that might make things a little more competitive, but right now it looks like Keller's.
I was trying to come up with some objective facts relative to the question I just asked you, and I'll start with this. I don't think any mayor is going to be able to effectively rebuild the Albuquerque Police Department until we get rid of the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. And here's some objective facts. Seattle had oversight for many, many years. I believe 10. Recently got rid of them within the last couple of years. Now their department all of a sudden is starting to thrive. New Orleans has been under the same scrutiny and oversight that we have been under. They are experiencing all the same problems. The paperwork is just ridiculous for our officers. And again, this program is not about complaining. This program is about,
sure,
let's find a solution. So,
James Genzer himself is getting $1 million a year.
And he doesn't live here. He has nothing to do with it. Yeah. This is the same kind of oversight we see at the border by our vice president, Kamala Harris. But I diverge. I won't go too far into that one. But he's visited our city about the same amount of time she's visited the border.
I'll tell you the good news is that it has, I think, widely been recognized throughout this campaign. During the early days of the campaign, it caught hold. The idea that there needs to be a focused effort to get out from under the DOJ. That is the first time during this campaign that I think that kind of has entered the zeitgeist in terms of widespread ideas. I don't know who is the most qualified to do that. Certainly Keller's been with them for 4 years. He is on the progressive side, which is, of course, the same as the Biden administration's side. So he is going to be very deferential, if you will, to DOJ, whereas other candidates may be a little more willing to say, okay, DOJ, Joe Biden, get your people out of here. We need to govern ourselves and police ourselves here in the city of Albuquerque. That is 1A, as you said. That is the most serious issue. And everything not essentially flows from that, but you can hire more cops with the same money. You can have them be more hands-on in terms of police on the beat and on the street and really interacting and doing the broken windows concept where you engage in preventative crime patrolling and those kinds of deals that I think will help significantly in our crime situation. There's no silver bullet, though.
So here's another objective fact. The current administration in the mayor's office helped to make Albuquerque a sanctuary city. Mm-hmm. And according to Manny Gonzalez, that's created a lot of problems with criminals moving here and centering their activities in our state. I think that Sheriff Gonzalez at least has one plan to get rid of us at being a sanctuary city. So that's one aspect that I point out. I haven't talked at great length with Eddie Aragon about any specific ideas, but Eddie is well aware of the problems, mm-hmm. and again, very eloquent about illustrating those problems. Paul, I love to talk to you because you're seeking answers. You're not just complaining. And again, I'm hoping that Eddie Aragon actually takes that tact as well, whether he's elected or not, to start, let's try to figure this out, because I certainly don't know what the answers are. But I love to talk to people that, hey, let's throw out 10 things. Let's try one and try one at a time until we get one right. But let's do something.
Well, I think Eddie, to my knowledge, has taken a more firm position on the homeless issue, which, yes, homeless and crime are not the same. It's not that our crime situation is driven by the homeless problem, but the lawless situation in our city, the lack of property rights, the lack of respect for people's buildings, and just the kind of anything goes atmosphere definitely creates some problems. And it seems like Eddie is more inclined to take a hard line and approach the homeless with a little tougher than kid gloves approach than we've seen so far, certainly from Mayor Keller. And, I know it's almost crass, but it is real. You know, you go up to the Sandias and you see the signs, don't feed the bears. Mm-hmm. And the more you keep feeding and incentivizing the homeless to come here and stay here and live here, whether they're in a shelter or not, but mostly not, you're going to, people respond to incentives. It's the basic tenet of economics. And we need to, I think, push people in those enterprises that are trying to help these people to do more of the tough love side of things. And, I'm not saying Eddie's going to have great success with that, but that needs to be part of the mix of approaches.
Paul, this isn't on my little list, but I want to tell you about an experience I had just a couple days ago. I'm headed north on Coors Road, almost to Alameda, heading into Corrales. And there's a car in front of me, maybe 200 feet. All of a sudden, I see the wheels lock up, smoke coming from the wheels and this and that. And a homeless person that was, and by the way, I don't think all these people panhandling on the corners are homeless. I'm just going to say a panhandler.
Right.
I almost think there's a conspiracy now to get people out of there, and these people are actually have a business, but that's a whole nother subject. Anyway, this panhandler had stumbled and fallen off the median into the road, and it is just a fortune, a providence of God that he did not get run over. And it happened right in front of me, and I'm just waiting. Mm-hmm. I believe that it's actually illegal for people to solicit on those corners. But I understand the ACLU and all kinds of other issues have been put out there. But I'm going to tell you, there is going to come a time, and it's going to be very sad when it happens, somebody's going to get taken out at one of those intersections, and then that's finally going to be over.
Like I said, we're already number one or two in the nation in pedestrian deaths. It's not like those are business people in downtown Albuquerque out on their lunch breaks walking through the streets and getting whacked by cars. It is, by and large, homeless people like that. And, yeah, the idea that you shouldn't fight the ACLU on that lawsuit and really push back and try to make sure that justice is done and that you can clear people off of those medians, because it's not just about standing on the medians. It's about stopping traffic, collecting money. It's about potentially falling off or having an accident. It's all of those things, not to mention all the littering and everything. So it is a rampant and serious problem. They clean it up once a year. The Balloon Fiesta, it was a lot more kind of under control for that one week. But you can do it for a week. You got to be able to do it for the other 51 weeks.
I love talking to you, Paul, but we never can cover too much specifics on any one subject.
Nope.
We've got a whole bunch more to talk about. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. Paul will be with us till the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
Carlos, tell us some of the common misconceptions between what maintenance is required on a refrigerated air system versus maybe a swamp cooling system.
A really common misconception with refrigerated air is that you only need to have it maintained every 3 to 4 years. Refrigerated air should be maintained every year. There's a lot of different things that can go wrong with that could be prevented, because 90% of our repairs are lack of maintenance. It's deferred maintenance. It's dirty coils.
Bosque Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200.
The Great Omission. That's what one author said the Great Mission has become. Obviously not acceptable. At KLYT, we know this Great Mission task is one for the church. Through October, we're putting a spotlight on a global outpost for the gospel. Slave Velasinov, serving with Calvary Church Global Missions in Croatia.
I believe that the Word of God is the only message for this broken world. The governments of this world are spending millions of dollars to cure the symptoms of the problem. And God has sent His Son to pay for the message with His blood to cure the root of the problem. And this is sin.
Support this month for Slave Velasinov will go towards a new vehicle critical in assisting him and his team to be part of fulfilling the command of Jesus in our lifetime. Support this ministry at klyt.fm.
From the KLYT broadcast studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Columbus Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086, or online at snmacherdental.com.
My least favorite subject, not for me personally, although wearing a mask is something that I occasionally defy and sometimes do in various stores. My kids don't have that chance to push back. They have to wear a mask in school, and that is the nub of the issue for me. I just went to a movie for my anniversary over there at Flicks up on Coors, and just to kind of reiterate how goofy the whole mask thing is. Of course, Flicks is a movie theater. It was closed for a year.
Yes,
and they serve food and drinks during your movie. Even if you're, in the restaurant, if you're walking in, you're supposed to have a mask on. If you're eating, you're not, or drinking, Do you think a single person, when they finish their beer or their nachos or their chicken strips or whatever, that they suddenly put their mask on in the movie theater? You're sitting in a dark room for 2.5 or so hours. There's no point. That's for adults, let alone our children. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But the ridiculousness is nowhere near ending. And our David Scrace, I don't know what I can call him, our governor's right-hand man when it comes to COVID, recently said that we could be in this.
Is his official title state epidemiologist?
It might be. I don't know his official title. I have some names for him I can share you. But they're radio friendly, but they're not personally friendly. Let's put it that way. But he's saying that we could be in this mask mandate situation for 2 to 3 more years. The number of states with universal indoor mask mandates is very small at this point. Doesn't include California, which people often assume, oh, California is where New Mexico gets its policies. Not even California has a universal indoor masking mandate. Not even San Francisco, the most liberal of all California cities, they just got rid of their indoor mask mandate. It's Washington
you
State.
You mean Pelosi Frisco?
Yes. And there's a book about San Francisco that just came out, and I forget the name. Michael Schellenberger, he's a well-known energy guy. He lives in San Francisco talking about the problems that they have, which are reflecting in many ways the urban ills that we just talked about in the last segment. But it's Washington State, Oregon, Hawaii, there's Louisiana and Illinois and New Mexico. And that's it. That's the list of states that have universal indoor mask mandates. And David Scrace is saying we could be in this mix for 2 to 3 more years. Now, to add further insult to that, I just saw a report on Fox News which said that the CDC, the Biden administration, is using the federal stimulus money that they're throwing around to essentially force school districts to abide by CDC regulations, or they don't get the funds from the Biden administration. And Walensky, the CDC chair head, she said also that even if you get kids vaccinated under the, you know, the new push is going to be for ramping up vaccination for 5 to 11-year-olds once that's approved, even once you get to, say, 90% of those kids, if they do, which I don't think they will, that we're going to keep mask mandates in place in the schools. So it is hyper frustrating. And this is personal for me because I have 3 kids in schools. It doesn't make any sense for them to be masked. It never did around the entire country, entire globe. Many countries, European countries in particular, did not mask their kids in classrooms. It is not good for the kids. We're seeing fighting. We're seeing all these issues, let alone all the academic problems that are kind of being covered up right now. It is shameful what is happening to our children, and people need to fight back. That's all I can say.
Paul, is there data showing where there are mask mandates that the spread of COVID is significantly less?
No. Whether it's classrooms where kids who are relatively safe from COVID, you have a very exponential increase in the danger of COVID. Very sick people, old people, Colin Powell fit all the demographics of somebody who was really going to face a challenge with COVID because he was immunocompromised from fighting cancer. He's 84 years old. And even with the vaccine, he was going to be prone to having issues with COVID. He ultimately passed away. Our children, even without the vaccine, are much safer than you and I. And I'm 46. You're older than me, but not that much older. And either way, we are still more prone to dying of COVID than our children are, 10, 15, 18-year-old kids, because of the way this virus works. So there is no data showing that mask mandates have done a lick of good, whether for adults or children, and it really does kill me. So anyway, the governor has extended the vaccine mandate to November 12th. Which gets to an issue of, I know, concern for you and directly. Not that you're not concerned about our children. You are.
I am.
But your children are a little older. And the Lobos basketball seasonal tip-off.
And the Aggies.
And the Aggies.
And Highland and Eastern
yeah,
Western.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all the teams are about ready to start taking the hardwood.
That means masks for sure when the season starts on all the fans, which I think will be an interesting thing to enforce, kind of like the movie theater. How many are they really going to have those ushers out running around chasing people down for not having their mask on? Are people going to put one popcorn kernel in their mouth at a time for the 2.5 hours of the basketball game? I think that's what's going to happen. The more interesting aspect of that, and I'm sorry to just keep on rolling, but there's so much to talk about, so many interesting aspects of all this. The governor put a mandate on vaccination at the state fair. She failed to do that only because she didn't have the power to do it at the Balloon Fiesta. Will she put a vaccination mandate on fans attending Lobo and Aggie and other basketball games? She's done it for the entire rest of the university system, all those state employees. I think it's a fascinating question to ask and something that we may not know the answer to until hours before tip-off, given the way she handled the state fair.
But let's take a look at the state fair, because I think you would say that those mask mandates did affect attendance at the state fair.
Oh, absolutely. There's no other argument to be had in terms of what affected those mandates. Yeah, we did a records request because the state, you know, they're under a fair commission, but it's ultimately up to the governor to make these policies. And so we went back a few years. We wanted to compare how attendance had gone at the fair, going back to 2018. In 2018, slightly more than 500,000 people showed up. 504,000 of the people attended the fair. In 2019, that dropped a little bit, 472,000, but same ballpark. 2020, of course, nobody attended the fair because the fair was completely canceled. And this is a largely outdoor activity. And then the governor comes along with her indoor, her mask vaccine mandate, I should say. There was a mask mandate indoors at the fair, but there was also a vaccine mandate that was imposed, including very short before the fair. So kids who weren't vaccinated, 12-year-old and up, couldn't get to the doctor and get their vaccinations if they wanted to. 275,000, more or less, attended the fair. So you're talking a 41% drop in attendance, and I lay that at the feet of the governor. Now, the Balloon Fiesta, they're not a state event. They're under a nonprofit body. The city of Albuquerque owns and manages the park out there, the Balloon Fiesta Park, and the governor tried to bully the Balloon Fiesta into forcing vaccinations on attendees. And she had some sour grapes about that in her announcement. She said, you know, they're not protecting the people. We haven't heard any reports of massive spread of the coronavirus, though, at Balloon Fiesta. What we've had is massive attendance drops at the state fair. And I think the opportunity, the discussion is clear. The data are clear.
Paul, as long as I've been alive, there's been a New Mexico State Fair. But one of the things that I know is that a lot of communities around the state, Las Cruces, Socorro, Farmington, just a few examples, Santa Fe, have now grown to be a size where having their own town state fairs is really something that might even be more beneficial than having a state fair. Is it time for us to kind of look at this? And I'll give you an example. I went up to the Great New Mexico Chili Taste Off. They invited me to come up, and that was held in Socorro during the state fair. I thought I was kind of surprised that they wouldn't do that at the state fair. They were so interested in having people come to Socorro, taste that Lemitar chili, and it was fantastic. And so I started to evaluate then. Maybe it's time. Maybe the state fair is kind of a dated event.
Well, I don't want to say that the state fair is not a wonderful event. It is when it is fully going and functional, and you don't have people like our governor trying to destroy it, for lack of a better term. And it's really the unfortunate group is the young people who missed out. Now, they went down to Roswell, and there was a regional fair, I guess, is what they would call it. It was down there, and they did the livestock displays and whatnot. But, you know, I'm amenable to other events. I do think that the upshot of some of this is that New Mexico is a state where the government has its tentacles into way too much stuff. And to the extent that you have private institutions that are not reliant or beholden to the government, I think you can have a lot more opportunity for policy differences and attempting to do things that are interesting and innovative. So, yeah, to the extent that you can have fairs and fair grounds, whether it's Socorro or down in Roswell or Las Cruces or other parts of our state, by all means, because we've seen that when the state gets involved, especially under this current governor, a lot of things that we enjoy and love go out the window.
Well, speaking of a lot of things that we enjoy and love, there's something necessary for a lot of that to happen, and that's energy. So we're going to spend our last segment talking about oil, gas, and coal when we come back. Paul Gessing with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
Here's Skip Heitzig with advice on a great spiritual workout.
Spiritual growth is not accidental. You don't wake up one day, look in the mirror, and go, oh, my goodness, I'm so mature. Spiritual growth is intentional, not accidental. Spiritual maturity is the human cooperation with the divine operation.
More solid advice from Skip.
You are never told in the Bible, lounge in the Spirit. You'll never find a verse. Look it up. Lounge. You'll never find it.
See the Skip Heitzig channel on YouTube.
You'll never find something that says, veg out in the Spirit. No, it says, walk in the Spirit.
Walk in the Spirit.
It means you actually have to cooperate by putting one foot in front of the other and engage in the process of working out something that has been worked in.
Now this from Skip.
It means you actually have to cooperate by putting one foot in front of the other and engage in the process of working out something that has been worked in.
The most important information anyone can receive comes from an understanding of the Bible. Only here do we find direct revelation about all things related to life and relationship with God. Life does not always provide us with time or opportunity to break away and study the Bible full time. That's why KLYT is dedicated to presenting round-the-clock teaching by some of the best communicators we can find about Scripture and how it relates to our lives. We need to be exposed to the full counsel of God's Word. KLYT presents the Bible School of the Air. Each Saturday, starting at 12, KLYT will present through the Bible verse-by-verse teachings by Chuck Smith, Skip Heitzig, and Chuck Missler, followed by a question-and-answer session with Scott Richards. Drop into our Bible journey at any time and go through the entire Word of God with us. The KLYT Bible School of the Air. Tuition is free. The rewards are eternal. Saturdays at 12 on 88.3 FM.
The water, I can hear you say, hold on, hold on.
Amazing Grace Personal Care Services brings Tracks of Light, 8 o'clock following Calvary Church Saturday service and Sunday evenings at 6. Amazing Grace Personal Care Services with meal preparation, household services, cognitive assistance in Albuquerque, Rio Rancho, and Gallup. Amazing Grace Personal Care Services online, homecare.theplaceilike.com.
Listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio. Paul, RioGrandeFoundation.org is a pretty good resource for people. You spend a lot of time getting information up there for the public. Why do you do that?
Well, we want to ultimately educate New Mexicans because we believe, like a lot of folks do, that New Mexico is one of the greatest states in the union. It definitely has the most opportunity to transform itself from, you know, the crime issues and the economic stagnation to a not only a beautiful state with all kinds of cultural uniqueness and amenities and unique fare and balloon fiesta and green chilies or red chilies, whatever makes you excited, or Christmas
year round, brother.
Yeah. So there's so many awesome aspects to New Mexico that if we just got the policymakers and the governments out of the way, we don't have to even have the most limited government. You know, we don't have to turn ourselves into Texas. Just do things better that have been proven in other states. We can be truly a boom state and a state that people want to be in and that our young people won't be leaving the state of New Mexico like they are now.
You just made an interesting statement. Do things better that have been done well in other states, to paraphrase. Yeah. How about oil and gas and energy management overall? I mean, you can just look at what happened in California when they got rid of all their coal generating stations. They've had brownouts and terrible problems with their power grid ever since they did that.
And of course, Texas, even Texas, which is kind of a free market bastion for a lot of people, they had some issues. They were overdoing it in terms of their emphasis on wind power predominantly last winter that caused their blackouts and brownouts and a lack of power to be available. And people died, and there were serious, serious issues down in Texas. New Mexico is an energy-rich state. We are second in oil production, so that means, you know, crude oil, which you use ultimately after it's refined for your car. We have a lot of natural gas, which helps us keep the lights on. Natural gas has been increasing over the last several years as a energy source, including for electricity generation. And that was because the fracking boom all across the country had generated more supplies of natural gas than, quite frankly, people knew what to do with. Well, times have changed. Now there's so much demand for natural gas, not just here, but across the globe. Asia, they're importing natural gas, which is a good thing. You know, you're seeing money flow in here that China is paying to us. You're seeing India also. You're seeing Europeans, if they can get their hands on it, they want to buy natural gas after it's been liquefied and shipped on a boat overseas. They would love that. But we have the energy. We have the energy to keep the lights on this winter, which is great because there is a global energy crunch going on as we speak. And Europe is at the epicenter. Europe has not done the fracking. Europe has not gone down the path of free market energy production. They don't do fracking in Western Europe. Instead, they rely on one Vladimir Putin, the essential dictator of Russia. I think we can kind of agree. Maybe I'll get hit by the Russian goons here. You never know. They might be listening and come after me. But he's basically the Russian strongman, and he controls 40% of their natural gas that comes into Europe. And so Europe this winter is going to be in a difficult situation. They're already dealing with massive price increases of natural gas and oil. Prices doubling and tripling for those, and even coal, which a lot of people thought coal was dead. One of the few people, and I quite honestly, this is, you know, rarely that Donald Trump was kind of more on point than somebody like me who really thinks about this stuff all the time. Sometimes Trump kind of flies off the handle. But he was saying, you know, we need to reinvest and work on coal. That's anathema to the environmental groups. But coal prices are up 318% this year because when push comes to shove, these countries, China, India, European countries, they are not going to sit around in the dark in the cold this winter with the lights out. If they can help it, they are even willing to go and buy coal on the international market to use that, even though it's got all the environmental issues, the CO2 emissions, all that stuff. No matter how much you clean it up, there's always some problems. Although you can, you know, there's a project in the works to turn the San Juan generating station up in Farmington into a zero carbon emission or very small carbon emission facility through carbon sequestration, essentially burying that carbon underground. But that's a prospective project that we don't know if it'll happen. But right now, you know, we in New Mexico should be happy because we will have heat. It's going to be expensive. Natural gas has gone up a lot. It's going to be a lot more expensive. We obviously drive around, and prices are over $3 here in Albuquerque and show no signs of going down anytime soon. So there are issues. The good news is that we have the supply, so we're not going to be in the same boat as Europe, where we're hoping that old Vlad doesn't cut us all off from our natural gas and our heat, and we're really behind the eight ball then.
Paul, I noticed from your notes that the UK may be looking at nuclear energy as an alternative.
Yeah. So Europe has kind of gotten in, and UK is kind of, obviously they had Brexit, but they're still European. They're their own little thing there on the island, off the continent. So they share a lot of views and opinions more with the United States than some of the European countries. And there's kind of a debate going on in Europe as to what they're going to do for the long term. And there are people, believe it or not, who with all the problems with the wind and solar and the inability to keep the lights on that they expect this winter, that they're going to go and double down on more wind, more solar, more of these efforts to use those technologies, which have not proven themselves to be capable of running a modern society. Now, the UK has also done a lot of wind and solar. They have the potential to do fracking, but they haven't done it. They obviously have some oil and gas offshore there in the North Sea. But the UK is looking at and just signed a contract, I might add, for 16 what are called modular nuclear reactors. And this is an opportunity for them to be green through the generation of zero carbon electricity, which is important for a lot of folks. It's also more steady and reasonable approach in terms of your ability to run modern society off of that energy source. So I don't know how long it's going to take them. I suspect there's going to be also some kinds of challenges from the radical environmentalists who, despite the zero carbon nature of nuclear, don't necessarily care for it. But they signed the contract. It'll be interesting to see how that process plays itself out over in the UK. France is a nuclear country already. France has already invested heavily and has for decades gotten a lot of its power from nuclear. So it's not unsafe when applied correctly.
Yeah. Paul, we've got about 4 minutes left, but we're going to head back to New Mexico and education. The famous PED in New Mexico is considering critical race theory as part of the curriculum in our public schools.
Yes, it's social studies standards that have been put forth by Governor Lujan Grisham and her public education department. And the Rio Grande Foundation, and you should do this as well, we have sent comments in expressing some significant concerns because we do believe that the critical race theory has been perpetrated and implemented through these new social study standards. I want to always say social security because I talk about that issue a lot, but social studies, this is for our kids being taught in school. How are they going to learn about stuff like the settlement of New Mexico and the Spaniards? Are they, you know, just pure killers, evil, you know, everything about them is bad, whereas Native Americans are just, you know, pure as the driven snow? Are guns something that are inherently evil? That's gun violence and gun issue is part of critical race, is a part of this, these new standards. And the standards aren't what I would call pure critical race theory. They don't say, hello, this is critical race theory. They say, you know, division and this ethnic group, and we're not equitable. Equitable means equal outcomes, not equality like we all want before the law. RioGrandeFoundation.org, folks have the opportunity to see those standards for themselves, investigate whether they think that they are appropriate for us to teach our children, or whether they're more oriented towards dividing us as a state, as a community, between gender lines, racial and ethnic lines, you know, kind of calling out the rich and, you know, targeting them because of all the supposed things that they've done to the rest of us. You can send in comments until early November. Just an email. You can do it snail mail. You can even do a fax, believe it or not.
But you've outlined this information.
And we have that information available, yes, on our website, riograndefoundation.org. You can find that for yourself. And I encourage people to do it.
We used up another hour. Paul, thanks for joining us today on ABQ Connect.
Thank you, Jim. That was a whirlwind, but it was fun.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosque Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosque Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.